Hi, welcome to Extra Time. My name is John Raymond. I'm the web editor for sport here at the National. Today, I'm joined by Paul Radley all the way from New Zealand, where he's been covering the Cricket World Cup for us. Thanks for joining me, Paul.
Yeah, hi, David.
How is it? What time is it over there? 7 p.m., 8 p.m.?
Yeah, it's 7:30 p.m. and it's pretty fine over here, actually, in Wellington, in the capital, which is, they call it Windy Wellington, because it's supposed to be a bit lively when the breeze gets up, but there's not a drop of breeze at the moment, beautiful blue skies, it's just, it's perfect, really.
Yeah, well, it's a bright morning in Abu Dhabi here. I'm glad the New Zealand weather is treating you well. The group play is almost over, just diving into it here now. What has been your biggest impression? I mean, you've been to a lot of games over there. You've been traveling around Australia and New Zealand for this tournament. What's some of the, I guess, the most standout moments or things you've seen or just impressions in general?
Well, in terms of the matches, I've been obviously following closely the UAE matches, and they've been terrific to follow, even though they've played four and lost four. A couple of them have been, as you might expect, hefty defeats against the world champions India and against Pakistan last time out. But before that, they had two very close games. Not to patronise them, they'd have wanted to win those games, but they were very close games that sort of caught the imagination of the wider public, really, because UAE in particular and the four associate nations in general, Scotland, Ireland, and one more, I forgot, Afghanistan, are sort of derided a little bit by the people that only watch mainstream cricket and some people, some notable people in Dubai at the ICC seem to think that these people don't belong at the Cricket World Cup. I think hopefully the UAE and certainly Ireland and the other nations, Afghanistan in particular, have shown that to be folly, really, because these sides, certainly to my mind, have really coloured the tournament more than anybody else. UAE have, I think, been taken to lots of people's hearts because of the fact that they're a plucky amateur story. All the guys have got day jobs, but they've shown that they're extremely talented and can play. And certainly in terms of the on-field action, a lot of what I've enjoyed most has been what those guys have done. Like Mohammed Naveed bowled absolutely brilliantly in the last game against Pakistan, and he's a guy who just played tape ball cricket in the streets in Fujairah, and his mates told him they thought he was pretty decent and he should go to Dubai to try out for the national team. He got on a bus, public bus from there, as soon as Akib Javed, the national coach, saw him. He absolutely loved him, and 2.5 years down the line, he's opening the bowling in the World Cup. It's a terrific story, and the UAE team is full of stories like that. So from that point of view, it's been fantastic.
Do you think, especially, I remember just here in the office, people were watching the UAE match against Ireland that went right down to the wire there. Ireland themselves have had a couple notable results. Afghanistan have been a great story, and been competitive, it seems, in a couple of their matches. Do you think there's any chance that there seems to be a lot of goodwill around the associate nations? Do you think there's a chance that will get revisited, that maybe someone at the ICC has seen, the color of this World Cup has been brought out, I would say, by the associate nations. Do you think there's anyone that's worried about that missing from the next World Cup?
Well, they better had be, otherwise they're totally neglecting the feelings of a vast majority of people, or vast number of people, I should say, because there's people everywhere that want their chance at this game, not even just the four sides that are here. People like cricket in Nepal has gained massive traction in recent years and has an absolutely huge following. If they're told that the next World Cup's only going to be 10 teams, it's virtually impossible. I think more or less impossible that Nepal or Papua New Guinea, who have made great strides and are another fantastic story,
the Netherlands, much like Afghanistan, who aren't here either.
All nations like that have no chance of making it to the next World Cup if it's only going to be 10 teams. And if you're then going to say that a certain amount of those places are safeguarded or ring-fenced for teams like England, who have proved that they're just not worthy of those places by playing so badly in this competition, then it just makes mockery of what sport is supposed to be about, which is about competition. It suggests that cricket, all it cares about is money making.
Now, moving on just a little bit from the associates, you mentioned Dinglin yesterday. That was one of the more memorable matches of the tournament. Not an associate nation, but a nation that is also, you know, one of those teams that's outside the real Big Eight that kind of control things. Bangladesh. What was your sense from that match? I guess on the English side, but also just in the sense that a kind of unexpected team, Bangladesh, will make it to the quarterfinals.
Yeah, well, Bangladesh were sort of derided a little bit for suggesting that they might have a chance of getting through. Mm-hmm. And I think their captain said before the tournament started that he wants one of his players to be in the top five run scorers in terms of the batsmen by the end of the tournament. A lot of people seem to think that was a joke, but they proved certainly Mahmudullah Riyad, who scored the runs, he scored the first Bangladeshi World Cup century, was absolutely terrific. And there's a side story to that, in that he learnt his cricket at Lord's. As part of a really successful program that they have at the MCC at Lord's, where other players like Kevin O'Brien, who scored mm-hmm. the century that beat England for Ireland in the last World Cup, Ross Taylor, who's done great things in times past, not so much recently, for New Zealand, Darren Sammy, who's captain West Indies, they've all come through that program. Yet England have been misfiring, certainly in one-day international cricket, and none of their players have done. So it's like they're... well, just by circumstance, it seems like they've been preparing players to do a job on England down the years. And Riyad actually scored the winning runs 4 years ago when Bangladesh beat them in the last World Cup. So perhaps England should think about sending some of their talented young players to the MCC.
Now, like I said earlier a little bit, that we are nearing the end of group play. Most of it seems a bit settled, although I think you were mentioning before we got recording here that in the other group with West Indies and Ireland, there's still some stuff to be sorted out. But looking even farther beyond, who has impressed you the most in terms of, you know, the really top contenders? India has obviously had a very good tournament so far. But is there anyone that you're seeing right now that looks like they could win it?
Yeah, New Zealand have been above and beyond everybody else, have been absolutely outstanding. In home conditions that their bowlers know very well and have exploited incredibly well. They've been the outstanding team so far that I've seen. In terms of India, they have been outstanding in regards to the fact that their lead up to the tournament was absolutely awful. Yet they've been, as soon as the tournament started, it's like a switch was flipped and they just decided, oh, well, this is all that matters. Forget about everything that's gone before. And they've been pretty much faultless since then. And so those two, Australia have been pretty powerful apart from they had a very close one wicket defeat to New Zealand. So they'll be in the mix as well. And then one side that perhaps were touted as being potential favourites or potential winners have struggled a little bit. South Africa, which might suit them actually, because they had a good run beforehand and they were getting talked up, and that doesn't always work in their favour if you look at past experiences that they've had.
Get the struggles out early.
In group play might sort of, you know, keep them honest and make them realise, especially given in a couple of games they've racked up 400 and they might just think, oh, we've got this game cracked, but the defeats might actually work in their favour and keep them honest. So those four teams are looking pretty good, I'd say.
And then just kind of wrapping it up with you here, more about the scenery. I know you wrote a really good piece for our paper that was kind of a running diary through your first week and a half or whatever it was there, just about the scenery and the hosting, the venues and the crowds. Having been around, you know, a lot of this tournament now, what is the sense of how it's going and the kind of excitement around it and the kind of scenery around it?
It's pretty diverse, actually, because in actual fact, if you look at the tournament itself, it spans, like the UAE will do five trips during the six pool stage matches, and I think that takes in more or less 13,000 kilometres. It's so spread out, this tournament. So they had one game in Perth, which was very different. I actually found that the two games they did one in Brisbane and one in Perth in Australia. Those two countries felt very sport orientated, very sort of, you know, if it wasn't the cricket that was going on, it would be sort of kiddies baseball down the road, or there was a Super Rugby match going on in the just a couple of blocks away in their nearest stadium. New Zealand has been, it just feels a little bit more compact and a little bit more very laid back about it all. If you look at previous World Cups, say in India or Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, where the last World Cup was, everybody knew that the World Cup was going on. You couldn't move without there being a massive picture Shakib Al Hassan, something like that. Over here in New Zealand, seems a little bit more chilled out about it, but they do obviously have very high hopes for their team and Brendan McCullum. In actual fact, I was sat in a cafe just opposite Brendan McCullum's family the other day, and just to sum it up, he was totally just left to his own devices, even though he's probably the most famous person in New Zealand at the moment. His family were just totally left to their own devices. They didn't need to worry about people coming up and bothering them. They just seemed very chilled out about it all, which is terrific, really.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Well, again, thanks for calling us all the way from New Zealand, 8 or 9 hours ahead or wherever you are right now. Again, I'm John Raymond, the web editor for sport here at the National. I've been joined by Paul Radley, our cricket reporter down under for the Cricket World Cup here in 2015. This has been produced by D.T. Unnikrishnan and the National Multimedia Desk. You can find it at the National Multimedia Twitter account, at NSVUAE, or the National Sport Twitter account, which is at NatSportUAE. Thanks for listening.